that the Saints
Thank you
are,
for making Saints Central your black and gold home for the New Orleans Saints.
Perhaps we can find some guys that can bring or introduce that to the line. And looking at the fact that the Saints' money situation is not as ideal as you would want it to be, where else you're going to find a talent but in a draft? You see, so it wouldn't be a bad thing. So potential fits, Christian Haynes, 6'3", 317, God size, love this guy. Love how he played. A lot of college experience. I watched a lot of tape on Christian Haynes. Very solid guard. Has good feet. He has some issues as well, but more pluses than minuses. The guy is a football player. High IQ, a lot of experience. Has good strength, good balance, and he plays really. And I say balance and balances in terms of his athletic ability. It's just a solid player there. So anyway, that's what's good. Brandon Coleman's another guy, 6'4", 313, big Coleman. Not only has the frame, but the length, checking it, the combine, 84-inch wingspan, then added an impressive performance in the drills, finishing the 9.98 relative score. 10 is the highest possible score, so he's smart there. He started games at both tackle and guard, which is good, and he likely still has room to grow as a player, considering he did not start playing football until his junior year of high school. And, of course, we just seen this guy, Mr. Boston, from Boston College, Mr. Christian Mahogany, who, if the Saints wanted to add some tenacity to the offensive line, they could do much worse. They can't do much worse than him, who is a mauler. That's definitely what he does. He did miss college football because of a torn ACL in 22, but he returned to the starting lineup for the opener last season and started 12 games at the right guard position. The Saints did bring him in. Wisconsin center Tanner Bartolini, rather, 6'4", 303, athlete. There's a lot to like about Mr. Bartolini, who lit up the combine. Also comes to the NFL with a lot of experience along the line. He started games at the tackle, guard, and center position in college. And one thing that may give the Saints pause about drafting him is his length. Straight Saints, it says, a trait the Saints often prioritize. He's about 6'4". His arms about 31.5 inches at the combine. And under Ireland, the Saints have only drafted one offensive lineman with arms shorter than 33 inches, which was Will Clapp. So that is a good sticking point to talk about. Also, other names to talk about is Mason McCormick, 6'4", 309 from South Dakota State. Arkansas's Bo Lemer at 6'5", 302. Michigan's guard Trevor Keegan, 6'5", 310. And LSU's offensive guard player Charles Turner, 6'4", 303. If anything, Turner. Drafting Turner probably would be a later on draft pick for the Saints if they actually look in LSU way. You know, hopefully we do get a local prospect, but you never know with the black and gold, man. That's just not a priority school. We usually have a place where we like to pick our apples from, and LSU is not one of those places, unfortunately. So that's a couple of standpoints and thought processes on the interior offensive lineman. Now to kind of address this thing, man. When you talk about interior, I'm not really big on James Hurst. You know, I think James Hurst, he signed that cheap deal and kind of lost a little money because, you know, he know what time it is. I mean, he's really not what he used to. He's gotten a lot older. He's gotten slower, and that speed was never his game. He's always been solid, but a lot of cracks in James Hurst's armor. And I often found myself last year saying that, if the Saints don't find a better player than James Hurst, you might as well take Carr and put him in the Hurst, because, you know, it's just not going to make any sense. But yeah, at some point you will hope that the New Orleans Saints address that position somewhere, whether it's in the draft or if you bring in a cheap veteran before training camp starts and have them to kind of fight out to provide stability there with James Hurst. I know people are big on Nick Saldivari. Don't know. I remember what he did in college. He was solid and versatile, but since he's gotten to the NFL, it's a whole new world. Hadn't seen much of him at all, especially last year he was hurt. So question marks there in terms of who can Nick Saldivari step up and challenge James Hurst, because that's what I'm looking at. Who challenges these guys for these positions? Because, and to my opinion, if some of these younger guys could step up and challenge some of these guys, man, we might have something going on here. And of course, we go to whodatdaily.com, the prospect tracker updated. Shout out to Niles Carpenter, our Saints contributor. And this, he had cataloged based on anything he could find, the prospects the Saints had looked at. And this is some of the guys that he found there and broke them down in visits. And he showed, you can see right here, the Saints looking at a multitude of different people. Christian Boyd out of Northern Iowa, Dylan Alube from New Hampshire, the running back, a couple of edge guys, Marshawn Nealon and Chop Robinson from Penn State. They, you know, wide receiver, and Keon Coleman, who's a Louisiana kid, which would be pretty cool too. A lot of people, I don't know what's going on with Keon Coleman, but a lot of people at first, he had a first round grade. I think it was more late than anything. But since then, he has slid a bit. And I don't remember his comment. I want to say he was at the combine. I don't think he had a fantastic combine. I mean, I don't know why that might explain why he's slipping a bit. But a lot of people now, at first he was seen as a late first round, and now he's seen more like a second and possibly even into the third round. But a big physical wide receiver that you throw the ball up to him, he going to get the ball. Big physical guy that can block, and he has some degree of speed with him too. But anyway, you see all the rest of the guys there, Malachi Corley, Marshawn Lloyd, the running back from USC. And then you see the Saints draft prospect meeting workouts with a ton of different people, quarterbacks from Jay Daniels, McCarthy, and you see it all the way down. It's just a long laundry list if y'all want to check it out. For the update, I think y'all can check it out under whodadaily.com. Now's he updates this thing. I think he updates it quite daily. I don't know if he updated it today, but he does his best, do a pretty good job of keeping the tracker updated. So anyway, so you can see a bunch of names the Saints are looking at in the draft, and you never know how they're going to play this thing. So like I said, when it comes down to it, and of course, here we go with the Saints salary cap update. There's over the cap is registering Saints at still at $8.3 million. Not much is shaking. The Saints ain't really spending a lot of money right now, and we know why, right? All right. So anyway, with that being said, the position, like I said, going back to the point about the offensive line, in my opinion, I think the offensive line should be the more dire need that you have. Now, of course, there's other things that the Saints could address, like getting another defensive tackle, adding a wide receiver, another wide receiver possibly in the draft, adding some help in the secondary would be good. Maybe another linebacker there wouldn't be bad either. But positions that you're looking at and saying that are dire positions, they have question marks. The only positions that you can say that about any position on the team is pretty much the offensive, the tackle positions, because Ryan Ramczyk, he's shaky. With his injury situation, the question marks surrounding Trevor Penning. Do they really want to go again with Trevor at the left tackle position with a shaky Ramczyk at right tackle? I just think a lot of this stuff needs to be solved, because there is no winning anything unless this offensive line is put together. And I'm not confident in James Hurst. I want to see some of these other guys challenge Hurst for that left guard position. So there's a question there. And the question is, where does Ali Udo play? Does he play at Hurst's position? Do he slides in if the Saints do draft somebody at the tackle position? Where does this the rookie goes? And, you know, like I said, it's interesting to see how it's all going to go. John Benton's a part of it to see if he can get the most. I know he's there to try to get Penning together, but where does Penning play? Do they try him at left tackle again, or do they move him to right tackle and say, Ram, you got to sit down for a little bit, bro. You're not helping nobody what you're doing. And then you know, you see what I'm saying? A lot of questions around that offensive line, and you need that line to win. And I ain't just talking about the starters. I'm talking about depth position too. With too many question marks. We don't know who Nick Saldivari is going to do or Landon Young. Landon Young showed some positive stuff last year, but still not enough. So at some point the Saints have to bring in some help there. And I'm thinking they'll probably bring out an old guy or two for minicamp, you know, to kind of help out whatever's left over. But in the draft, man, that offensive line, you're not winning nothing if you can't keep Derek Carr upright and you can't run the ball. We've seen that last year happen, and a lot of that helped stop the Saints from winning games that could have propelled them into a playoff situation. We couldn't get the running attack going. We couldn't, you know, keep the quarterback. And then again, the quarterback tends to hold the damn ball too long at times. He doesn't have a clock in his head. So, you know, it's a lot going on in the city of New Orleans. When we talk about what the hell is going on with the New Orleans Saints offense, let me tell you. So the big part of success for the Saints in 2024 will be them fixing the offensive line, finding out who the tackles are going to be, finding out who the left guard is going to be, getting the offensive system of Clint Kubiak installed properly so that the Saints can run the ball effectively and go from there. So a lot of pressure, man, my goodness, a lot of pressure on the Saints offense to do their thing. It's a lot of pressure on the Saints offense this year, man. A lot of pressure on them. I will see, man. I'm going to just reserve my commentary and see how that shakes loose. So anyway, let's hit the chat, man, and see what you guys think about what's going on here. Y'all hit that. Also, y'all hit that. Yeah, we got some votes in for the poll that's there. And there is it's a consensus, man. It's a unanimous runaway in the poll, fam. Which position in the draft should the Saints address first? And the fam ain't playing. They said, man, 78% of the family members said that the offensive tackle position should be the position in which the Saints go. The next biggest sum is 13%. So we go from 78% to 13%, which is defensive end, and then 7% for wide receiver and 2% for the cornerback position. So y'all guys are pretty much, I'm gauging you guys' thoughts and see exactly where your minds are. Are your minds agreeing with me about this whole situation with the offensive line? And, you know, like I said, I'm very leery on three positions of the Saints offensive line. And you cannot win in the NFL unless you get that together. And hopefully the Saints are going to, you know, do that. Now, like I said, there are going to be a lot of good tackles, but you don't want to press that thing. You want to be able to get the best one available with a really good tackle. Listen, if Fashanu, who some have Fashanu, Olu Fashanu listed as the second best offensive tackle in the draft, if he falls to you at 14, that would be unreal if that happens. You know, if he falls to you there, then that's bam. But you also have several really other talented guys there, like Fuaga. I like Fuaga. I like J.C. Latham from Alabama a little bit better than I like Fuaga. But Fashanu, man, if he falls to you, man, you got to take that guy, man. But then again, I would not be upset if Bowers falls to you at 14, right? And I don't think he makes it past the Jets. But if he falls to you at 14, then bam, you know, that's just, that guy's like just a weapon that you have to throw out the board a little bit when that happens. I would just be honest with you. If Bowers falls to you, I'd be like, well, listen, we just got to move around a little bit to get that position taken care of. So anyway, any questions, y'all throw them in the chat, fam. Go about another 30 minutes or so, and then we get the hell out of here, man. But y'all throw any questions that y'all have, please feel free to throw them in the chat. We up in this thing. All right, shout out to the fam, man. What's up, my brother Low? How you doing, sir? My dog Low in the thing, man. Much love, brother Low. Good to see you. All right, brother Mark says, Clint, he says, if the Saints are going to make some noise, we need to beef up the old line just in case the new offensive coordinator can make a difference with the Cards. All right, thank you, bro. And indeed, Jack says, if the top two to three offensive tackles and Brock, then I would trade back a few spots and pick up more draft capital. All right. A lot of people's talking about them stockpiling picks for the future. Well, guess what, fam? There is no future. No future. There ain't no damn future if you're Dennis Allen. Let's just keep it a buck 15. There isn't any future if you got Dennis Allen. I'm not disparaging Dennis. I'm saying Dennis Allen's been here. This is going to be his third year that Dennis Allen's been here. Third year. He's been here. That's three nine playoff years altogether. And the onus is on Dennis Allen to take the New Orleans Saints and put them in the playoffs. That saves his job, even though a lot of people don't want to hear that because they know Dennis Allen is not a real head coach. He's a defensive coordinator at best, and he doesn't have the skills needed to be an effective head coach. He doesn't communicate well. He's not good at attention to detail. He's an off-code-ass coach that don't understand that you don't throw your team on up, you know, in front of the, you know, underneath the bus. That won't endear yourself to him. That actually destroys your team. It's a lot of silly stuff that a person of his character doesn't know. And then he's not one of these guys that it gets smarter in off season. No disrespect. And listen, I'm not disrespect. This is based on observations that I'm watching from Dennis Allen over the years. And what I'm saying is he has a talented team that underperforms. He's this, that's mismanagement. A lot of this, a lot of the situations that dealing with the Saints dysfunction is because of him. He doesn't adjust. He doesn't adjust fast enough to fix the problems and issues that the team has. You see what I'm talking about? He doesn't. And you have to, in this, you coming at really good coaches out there, really good coaches in the NFL that adjust. And then in the offseason, they study their asses off. They improve themselves as a coach, as opposed to sit up there and think that Mickey Loomis, who is another guy that protects mismanagement, will protect him. Well, he got his. We told Mickey Loomis ass up last year, man. Did you ever, y'all ever see Mickey act and behave that way? That wasn't because of nothing. That was because of the pressure that me and the Who Dat Nation and the rest of us was putting on Mickey Loomis. Mickey Loomis, they never felt that kind of pressure before. Never. But he was feeling the pressure. And my, listen, the media people did a great job of expressing the compassion and, you know, of the family base, because we wasn't having that. Plus, you know, it was like I said, just keeping it real and calling it out. That's what you got to do. You can't sit up here and pretend like the stuff is not happening. You got to call it out, you know. And this is my squad for many years, for 30 plus years. I've been a Black and Gold man. So does it hurt me to call my team out? Not a goddamn one, bro, because I want to see them right. You know, like I'm one of these people. I also think like this. If you got an effed up society, right, and tore up society, dirty, stealing ass politicians and all that, you know whose fault that's for? That's, you know whose fault that is? That's your fault. Why? Because you're supposed to be watching these people to make sure they're not doing this kind of old stuff. See, it's only when you let them run it that they're going to mismanage. Most of them politicians, I wouldn't give a damn dollar to them and say, hold this right quick. I'm going to go around the corner and go get something and come right back. Hell no. Some account, it's called accountability. And if we don't keep them accountable, then who's going to? Nobody who works for the team or is getting money from the team is going to keep the team accountable. That's why they do their best to hire these people so that they minimize as much criticism as they possibly can. But you can never give them that. You still have to keep it real and you still have to call a spade. You can't sit up here and make excuses for failure. you know, you can't do that. So, yes, I'm tough because I want to see winning. I don't want to waste my time losing. I don't want to lose to the Falcons. I don't want to lose to the Panthers. I don't want to lose to none of these teams. I know we ain't going to win every game, but at least the majority of the time we in there fighting our asses off trying to get the win. And if we lose, it's because the other team wanted a little bit better, but we gave it all we got that year. It just didn't work out. You see what I'm saying? We can live with that. Seriously, we can live with that. You know, I can't live with a dumb coach, and I'm not calling him that, but I'm just saying in general, I can't live with a dumb coach who's off code, who throws his team under the bus, and then you got a dumb ass general manager that come out and protect it. Man, I can't live with that. I don't care if you don't like it or not. I don't care if you like it or not. And most of the time, most of the people, they ain't going to like it because it's the truth. You won't hear all these pretty platitudes about this, that, and the third. No. Face the reality, man. That's how we're going to make this stuff right. Most of the times, they need your pressure to turn it around. And this happens all the time, man. We see a lot of this stuff in these political parties when they try to tell you what they want you to do as opposed to listen to what you want them to do. Hell no. Nah. You're going to do what we said. We're going to get you about it. That's the bottom line. That should be the mentality. And I'm proud of the people because it's coming around that we see that in sports, too. We see that in sports. People are starting to take that approach. So, yeah, we ain't doing that, man. We ain't playing that BS, man. And I'm going to continue to be hardcore on these people until they get this stuff right. And of course, like I say, when they say little stuff like, well, it's because of C-19, why we got to play it really close to the we got to be economically sound over the next 2 years because of what happened back in 2020, and we in 2024. Don't you believe it? He ain't going to actually tell on himself and say, yeah, I mismanaged the hell out the cap. I paid for players I couldn't possibly afford. You know, I should have said no, and we should have did something else. No, I paid for players I couldn't afford, and I mortgaged the future of the team for the present, and we didn't win. So now I'm going to blame it on C-19. And I'm going to sit up here and tell your ass, no, you're not going to do that. You're going to tell the truth and shame the devil. That's what the hell you're going to do. You're going to tell the damn truth. It wasn't C-19 why the Saints cap shit is messed up. It's because of paying for players that you couldn't afford for people who didn't know what the hell they was doing. Doing this type of this non-vision crap while saying we got a plan and you didn't have a plan. That's keeping it real because that's the truth. Don't sound as luxurious and as beautiful as you would like it to hear, but that's the hell. That's what the hell happened. But the truth, the matter is, most general managers behave like politicians. So you gotta pull that veil away, and you gotta tell the truth. And they don't like for you to do that, to expose them as liars. If you don't like to be exposed as a liar, start telling the damn truth. Tuck says, not the first time we've gone O-line in back-to-back years. Jack says, thank you there. Jack says, O-line is trash, but doesn't help that Carr is a magnet for pressure. The thing that Carr draw is, listen, Derek Carr, let me tell you something, bro. I seen the little guy put up, he was on Instagram. Y'all put one in the chat if y'all seen the guy threw the little comment up on him. And he kind of said, thank you, but the hate, but we ain't doing that today and all this kind of stuff. Y'all see that? Put one in the chat if y'all seen a little Instagram post where the guy got on there and kind of threw some shade at Derek Carr. let me tell you people something, man. Let me tell the Carrs of the Derek Carrs of the world something, man. Listen, let me tell you something, brother. It's about accountability. If you don't come in here and show, and people know what accountability looks like, man. I don't know what happened with you with the Raiders. And when you took $150 million from the New Orleans Saints organization, listen, player, it's not going to, if you don't come in here and do your absolute best, and I'm not saying you have to be perfect, but you got to show an effort. Not only on the field, you cool off field. I don't have no problem with your stuff off the field, but on the field, and when you're in front of the press, you have to take responsibility when things don't go right with that offense, and you got to do it all the time, even if it ain't your fault. That's how a leader commands and take possession of his offense. We can't be having you and the dumbass coach pointing at a wide receiver and telling them, well, he ran the wrong route or whatever this case was. And that wasn't even the case. So, I mean, no, these people, hopefully Clint Kubiak will push Derek Carr just like Gruden did, because that's what he needs. He's not. And listen, there are not too many people that's like a Drew Brees. He said he went and talked to Drew Brees and he got a bunch of information from Drew Brees. I hope Drew Brees turned around and told him, say, bro, listen, learn what one Mississippi is. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi, get rid of the ball. Develop a clock in your head. You don't have time to stand back there all day and hold on the ball while staring down one side of the field. That part of the game has to change, Derek Carr. And listen, bro, that's not hate. If you don't believe what I'm saying, go back and look at all of your film. The majority of your film have you staring down one side of the field, and then you check it down. You're very easy to prepare for, and you do a disservice to your offense and your players when you don't follow football fundamentals as a quarterback. And the fundamental is you're supposed to go through your progressions when you back there, bro. Unless it's designed for you to go to the check down right away to set up a screen or something like that. Even in some of those plays, you're supposed to pump to the right side if you're going left for the screen to freeze them. So at some point, we got to take possession of that. And I know that the coaches, the last bunch of coaches, wasn't telling you that because we kept seeing it over and over again on film. We studied the same film you got. The NFL has the same film that you study, and we see the same stuff. We see all the angles when we put the all 22s on. We see it all. So that has to change, bro. Seriously. And that's the two biggest things to talk about before I even talk about Carr's accuracy. You know, that's the two biggest things, because really he should have had like 4,400 yards passing this year. But a lot of that was limited. And like I said, it's not all on Derek Carr. It was the fact that he was very shaky behind that offensive line, too. He did not trust that offensive line, and rightfully so, because the offensive line was hit and miss. They didn't play with no true intensity. And many times it didn't open up lanes for the running backs to run. You know, they were really shaky. They were up and down. We watched the tape. Like I talked about, even people like Eric, they talk about Eric McCoy. To me, McCoy's last year wasn't all of that. To me, if you watch McCoy's tape from last year, McCoy, like y'all know how I got this joke about Eric McCoy became a gardener. He became a landscaper last year because he spent most of his time in the grass. We always seen McCoy ass on the grass. I'm like, boy, when did the Saints hire an expensive center / landscaper? This guy is always on the ground studying the turf. What's going on? McCoy has become a turfologist. He's always on the turf studying the turf, you know, and then Cesar Ruiz would be pulling on something and missing blocks. And see, when you see that happening, an offensive line played so topsy-turvy, a lot of that is because of confusion, because they're not getting proper instruction from the offensive line coach, which we happy he's fired. So hopefully a lot of that is changed, because a lot of pressure is going to be on John Benton, the new offensive line coach. A lot of pressure is going to be on Clint Kubiak, the new offensive coordinator. A lot of pressure is going to be on Andrew Janoku, the new QB coach. A lot of these guys are going to be on a lot of pressure, because their units will have to step up and play and carry the team for this upcoming season for them to have success. Because the Saints, Dennis Allen did a pretty decent job of adding players to his defense. He added Chase Young on that side. And despite the neck surgery, they're saying he should be ready for the season, for training camp or whatever. Despite that, they did a decent job of re-putting talent to the defense. You add Chase over there, you add Willie Gay, who's supposed to challenge for a linebacker position. You bring back Jonathan Abrams and Hugo Amadi. You bring them back. Marshawn Lattimore is stuff starting. We're starting to see stuff about Laddie Daddy. Might actually stay. It might, you know, they might keep him depending on what it looks like. We're going to just hold on to that right now. Hopefully that stays the same. That Laddie Daddy might end up sticking around. So Dennis Allen did a good job of adding more talent to his offense. I mean, to his defense. But when you look at the offense, Michael Thomas is out. Cedric Wilson Jr., who's a decent wide receiver veteran, there to help out. And then you have Stanley Morgan, the special teams guy. And then you add Ali Udo. You add the fullback that we bring in there. You re-sign Prentice. So you look at who won in the free agency, like so far early in free agency, was it the Saints offense and versus the Saints defense? You would say the Saints defense. So Dennis Allen did a good job of kind of fortifying that defense, you dig? But we need to see that offense. We need to see more from our offense. And like I said, it's approach that they're taking is like, okay, the posture is like, we're going to do something in this draft. And like I said, I'm looking at it, but do they actually have the players that they see as starters for the positions that we're looking at on the team in their minds is what I'm asking. Because you're looking at how they're moving from an energy standpoint, and you're thinking up to this point, if it was a need, usually your needs, you behave a certain way. You react a certain way, which is speed and the way you acquire talent. Like you come out, bam, I'm going right to that. When the Saints opened up free agency, they were talking to Avante Maddox, you know, the cornerback. I was like, okay. And then they went to other positions. They went defense and then kind of drift the offense. And then the defense won the day in terms of free agencies up to this point. But when you talk about the offensive line, I'm like, what are we looking at? What is Ali Udo supposed to be? Is Trevor Penning going to be the left tackle or the right tackle? What's up with Ryan Ramczyk, who Dennis Allen said that his injury, he's still healing slower than what he's supposed to. And we're 2 weeks from the draft, and I'm like, what's going on here? You know, do they have an elevated thought process on some of these players? You know, So, you know, it's very interesting. We'll see exactly what's going on. But a offensive line coach, a good offensive line coach, can make things change, man. They can really do. All right, Scott McCloud says Mickey just ended.